Okay, we're on mic now, Jim.
All right.
I'll get to the pictures. Yeah, I've been meaning to stop by and see Lillian at the work, but my mom's actually working in her office right
That's
now.
That's what she said, yeah.
And but right now is a crazy time in Lillian's office.
Getting ready for commencement, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Mom used to work in, she doesn't work there full-time, she works down at the community college now, but she used to work in the graduation. She worked there for 10 or 15 years. And getting close to graduation, they'd be there last month, all of April, till 9 or 10 o'clock every night. Hello. What's that? There we go. I think.
We got one here. It clicked a few times and it went out.
Yeah, I think that's the hard drive light. I wonder if maybe if I. Okay.
Well, it's not even wired to anything.
Let's go that way. Okay. Why isn't the mouse working? Hello, maybe the connect button. There we go. Okay. Technology, ain't it great?
It just amazes me the time spent fooling with it before you get them going here.
And the whole paperless office thing?
Yeah, supposedly.
Okay, we've done slide tray 1 and 2. So that leaves us with slide tray 3.
Okay.
And I think this is Arctic Village. I believe these are the beaver pictures. So that's Arctic Village.
Looks like it, yeah.
Oh, I guess I probably ought to announce on the tape it's, what's the date today, the 26th? Yeah, it's the 26th.
March.
It's March 26th, 2011. I'm here with Jim Anderson. And we're reviewing slide tray number 3. And Jim's going to narrate the pictures that we're looking at on the computer. And here we go. I actually went to Arctic Village 1 year to teach a weekend computer class.
Was that fuzzy, huh?
No. Oh. It's working on it.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Yeah, we're working away on it there. Getting just started out, I think.
And this is a weaned beaver.
Yeah, it's a weaned beaver that going to Arctic Village, and there was so much smoke and hanging over the river in front of the village, it couldn't land there. So the pilot went back upstream a ways and started to land and went to pump the flaps down, and they went up instead. He fell down and spread the gear out and caught one wing. You can see the barrel out there in the end with the rope on it. We're Spanish windlassing that down to bring her down a little bit. It was bent at a pretty good angle.
Bent up?
Yeah, it was bent up quite a bit. You know, anyhow, we're getting it down a bit so we can put a big heavy plate on top and hold it in place. Out in the picture is Arrow Hill, another wing mechanic. That's about it. Wing covers hanging over there. That's also where we had our mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the stove.
Where were you staying during this repair?
In a little tent right next to it. Uh-huh. And the warmest weather we saw was 35 below in the middle of the day. An unheated tent, I might say.
To get all your gear up there in the space heater, did whoever brought you up there just land on the river next to it?
Yeah, they landed on the river and near it. We unloaded there.
So you guys weren't going to the village and staying in a nice warm cabin each night?
No, we were here two or three nights, And then we got things fixed up enough so we could taxi down, and then we stayed at the village for another 3-4 days. We spent Thanksgiving there at the village, as a matter of fact. Nice time.
This was late 60s?
Late early, I think. It probably would have been 65, maybe, somewhere near.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little more detail about what all this repair involved?
Well, like I say, the wing was bent up probably about 20-degree angle, outboard of the strut. The landing gear had broken loose and still attached to the airplane, but it had, the top had been forced into the fuselage a ways. So, of course, it's kind of spread out, as you can see there. I believe we cabled it together at the bottom of the come-along and brought it in to where we could work on it and put some clamps and cables around the top end to get it basically back where it was. The fittings were broken, but this would get it up and get it level for takeoff and taxiing around.
Is he on skis?
Oh, yeah, wheel skis. Wheel skis.
And there's also part of the repair for the wing was a big piece of aluminum.
Yeah, we'd made that up in a tween hangar before we came up. I'd been up once and looked at it, figured out what to do. And we took a piece of heavy aluminum, worked with it, and formed it to the shape, and used another beaver wing that was in the hangar to double check it. Got it formed fairly well for the curvature, and then just after we got that sucked down, we're up there with drills, hand drills, what we used to call an egg beater drill. And we drilled the holes by hand and then screwed it all together. Then we ran a cable and some turnbuckles in from the strut fit, no, from the wing tip. Put a little attachment out there. We ran the cables in from the wing tip down, attached on somewhere around the gear or the struts. I'm not sure which now. It's quite a while ago.
There's another picture a little later, I think when the plane is flying maybe, that there's a picture of that cable coming down.
Maybe. But, yeah, I remember when we stopped at Fort Yukon for fuel, we had to tighten them up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And that was just because the structurally the wing wasn't sound. You had to...
No. Just the cables kind of stretched a bit.
Oh, no.
See, it would have been bad if the wing would have started moving. They would have got tighter. That's what I was worried about.
I guess I was referring to the piece of aluminum just to reinforce the structure of the wing.
Yeah. It was, you don't know what happened, but everything worked fine all the way in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would have been a good picture, except for the smoke off the heater.
What? Any idea what year this plane was made, built?
It's a Beaver. They built them way back in... They flew in Korea, I know that.
Uh-huh.
Latter part of Korea, in the 40s, somewhere late 40s.
Was Ween... This would have been when Ween was still pretty much based out of Fairbanks, or were they based out of Anchorage?
No, based out of Fairbanks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They no longer had a...
The only thing, the biggest plane they had was the F-27 at this time.
Mm-hmm. So was no much of a base for them at that point? Did they still have, because they used to, originally they were, well, not originally.
Well, yeah, originally it started in Nome, then it moved to Fairbanks. But all they had, Weens at that time had planes in an awful lot of villages around the country. They'd have a 185 here and another one there. Barrow, they had a couple airplanes there because that was kind of a meeting place. I think they had 2-3 airplanes at Nome, including a DC-3 at Nome that flew out to, what's that island? St. Lawrence Island.
Because
they haven't gone over water. Need a twin engine for that. Oh, yeah, that's a good one there, yeah.
Is this your tent over on the right edge?
Yeah, I expect it is.
Ah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's supposed to be the Chandler River, huh?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, that was rough and tough in those days. The parka. I even made that myself.
Did you?
That was out of wing cover canvas. Yeah, I was working in the dope and fabric shop. There was a sewing machine there, so I gathered up a pattern and made that parka shell and then put it over an old GI parka for us, I think, for insulation.
That was probably a precursor to Carhartts.
And I made it for several of the guys.
Was there anything
wrong? Yeah, there you can see the cables along. One in the rear gear fitting and one going probably into an engine mount. Yeah.
Is that
and just... there's the patch there, you see. We brought it around.
Oh, okay.
It was really a pretty stout piece of material.
Was there kind of a kink in the wing there? Is that?
Oh, yeah. It was a definite bend. Like I say, it was probably bent about 20 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought it down quite some with the full barrel of gas and this rope windlass thing. Twisting the rope to tie bring her down. And then it was all stressed downwards when we put the plate on.
Was the rear gear okay?
Tail wheel?
Yeah.
For a while. And when we tried to move the airplane and the skis were kind of stuck, usually you raise the tail and you let it come down and maybe break the skis loose. Well, it was already damaged. I didn't realize it, and it broke out, so we had to put up a couple of pieces of wood, a couple of pieces of spruce trees, if I remember right, in there to get that lined up again. Yeah, now there. I believe that was right at Arctic Village. Mm-hmm. We had the engine all covered up, and we were going to run it up and see if it could work the radios. We were trying to get in touch with Fairbanks to tell them it was ready. But that didn't work too good. In fact, we were using the fire pot, and it caught the engine cover on fire and kind of smoked up the paint on the cowling a little bit. You can see it's still a little bit tilted. Couldn't get the gear in all as far as we wanted to.
You had quite the story about when you were taxiing from the crash site.
Oh, my, down to the village. Yes. We decided better get to the village. Maybe we'd have a better place to sleep without freezing ourselves or something going wrong. So we started it up, got it running. Everything is fine. It wouldn't move. The skis had too much frost on the bottom. So shut her all down and put the wheels down, raised the skis up, scraped all the ice and crust off the skis, put it back down. Well, this time it's getting a little dark. We got her going again. We had all our camp struck and everything put away, so I said, well, we better do it. And I thought it was only going to be a mile or so. And the Chandelier River in that area is quite curvy. And we ran around curve after curve after curve, and I was beginning to wonder if I'd gone the right direction. Finally, somebody was waving a lantern down on the bank of the river. I said, oh, we're there. And I was so confused after all this running in the dark and turning and these curves that to me we were going the wrong direction and this lantern was on the wrong side of the river. I tell you, we were mixed up. We were having a hell of a time. For one thing, I put the flaps down a little bit, figuring it'd slide better because we'd had trouble with that. Found out later that kind of affected my rudder steering. So, we were airborne a few times going across sandbars and things. But it all worked. I got it down to village.
What was the name of the fellow who was up there doing the repair with you?
Errol Hill.
Errol Hill.
Yeah. It's the first bush trip he ever made. And he asked me later, he says, how come you picked me to go up there? I'd never been out on one of those trips at all. I says, well, that was one reason, Errol. I figured you kind of liked that. And I knew you had some good gear, and I knew you could take care of yourself in the cold weather. And also, I figured Errol was a good-sized man. And I said, Errol, I also figured if the battery was gone, you could hand-prop that airplane pretty easy. More than me. I was kind of skinny in those days. So he laughed, and he says, you Swedes, you're too smart.
And you ate good on this trip once you figured
out. Oh, yeah, yeah. Weens had turned us loose in the grocery store. First, the eggs froze, so we boiled them frozen and ate them that way. That wasn't bad. And then we got some steaks. Got them all cooked up. This is the first night. Got cooked up, going, and everything's fine. Arrow's camp gear consisted of tin plates, being an old-timer. Well, the steak froze to the plate before you could finish eating it. So we had to toast the bread a little bit, thaw it out, and then we put it down, and we put the meat on top of it, the other whatever worse we had.
And it was cold on that trip.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, the warmest we saw was 35 below in the daytime. It was past 50 at night.
Mm.
It was late November. We because, like I said, we spent Thanksgiving at Arctic Village.
Was the tent heated? Did you have
a heater? No. We just had the one Herman Nelson. We couldn't let it run all night. You know, you just run out of fuel. So we would take the engine out and put it in a gas box with a, what do they call those? And a heater that was a...
Catalytic
heater. Yeah, it was in this gas box. We'd put the motor on top of that and cover it all up. Keep it warm enough to start in the morning. And it was so cold that the catalytic heater was barely going in the morning, and we weren't sleeping too long.
Mm.
We had gas lanterns and all, so we worked late as we could. Oh, yeah.
What do you have and, for... Go ahead.
No, the tent was cold, on the ice, everything. That's about it. Just miserable.
What do you guys have for sleeping gear? They didn't have synthetic 60-blow bags in those days.
I had a big old Woods or something, 4-star, big feather bag I inherited. Arrowhead a 3-star. That's the way they rated them in those days. But he had an air mattress. But he was trying to trade me out of the air mattress, trade me out of my sleeping bag because it was a little larger and warmer.
Mm-hmm.
And an arrow in a 3-star Woods was just like being in a money bag. It was that broad,
mm-hmm.
heavy. But I wouldn't trade. No way.
Did Arrow go out on any more field repairs after
that? No. Let's see. I went up on the dew line not long after that. And Arrow started getting MS. Started to get him a bit. So he was pretty much staying in the hangar. Overhaul brakes, things like that.
And there you can see that cable.
Yeah, you see that was good. The cable's a little slack. That means the wing wasn't trying to go up or anything like that.
Mm.
And then we've got a cord between the two wires kind of holding them so they don't vibrate too much.
Mm. Boy, the old planes used to be just massive wires way back.
Oh, there was a lot of them, yeah.
Biplanes and
all those, yeah. That was the DC-3, and that picture is taken at the dew line site at Point Barrow.
Mm.
Yeah,
I see they have that the Marston matting. Is that what that's called?
Yeah, there was Marston. The whole runway was that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the runway was gravel, and the parking lot was Marston matting, anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was up there for darn near a year, riding along, playing flight attendant and mechanic.
Were you married?
No.
This time, so you weren't getting in trouble for being gone for a year?
No. In fact, that's the reason I was up there. It was probably the best paying job that Weems had. Well, I'd been building a house. I'd been married for about a year, and I found out things weren't going too well when I was out of town, so I got divorced. And then I found out I was absolutely broke, so I took this job on the dew line. Nobody else wanted, because there was lots of overtime and free room and board.
Mm-hmm.
And I got resurrected financially up there. In fact, one of the funny ones, I was washing, cleaning up some parts up in there. DSL shop, what do they call it? Depot level shop, something, everything. Anyhow, they had a couple of good cleaning tanks. I went there washing up some parts, and they invited me in for coffee. So I hadn't been there very long yet. We're sitting there, about a dozen fellas, and one of them says, "Well, what brings you to the dew line?" And I says, "Well, divorce." And I think 10 of those 12 started laughing. They were there for the same reason. A lot of that went on. Yeah, that's the coastline. Couldn't tell you. I think we were coming back in. It's probably close to Wainwright, heading for Barrow. We would have been heading, pretty much north-south there, and you get past Barrow, then you go east and west. Yeah. It was a beautiful night. That's the Will Rogers Wiley Post Monument there.
Okay.
That's where they got killed.
I was always under the impression that that was, I thought that was way up at Point Barrow, but it's more down further south.
Yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, it's between Barrow and Wainwright.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Is that a structure there with it?
There's a couple of monuments. There's mm-hmm. another one to the Sullivan brothers that got five mm-hmm. of them on one ship in the Navy in World War II, and they all got killed.
Mm-hmm. Were the Sullivan brothers from?
I don't think so. I don't know how that ended up that way.
I
never checked up on that. And that was a beautiful day in August. I think that was about it. Late July or August.
Mm-hmm. Is this in the DC-3?
Yeah, looking through the front. Right, windshield.
Most of the hands who you guys moved around for the dew line, were they mostly lower 48 folks? Or?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just about all of them. The mechanics and stuff tended to be from Alaska, mm-hmm. older fellas. A lot of them had been there for years. Some of them had been up there with Puget Sound and Drake, 1948, when they first built some of this stuff, and we're out in the oil exploration.
Mm-hmm.
You can just barely see on the top of that picture, that's Point Barrow,
mm-hmm.
which at that time looked like a collection of shacks on a dump.
Mm-hmm.
It was something else.
Another shot of Barrow?
Yeah.
Looks pretty tiny back then. I bet it's grown a bit
since then. I guess. I haven't been up there since I left, you know. No reason to go there. Oh, yeah.
I guess they don't generally have rough seas there, but it struck me in this picture how close that looked like everything was to the shore.
Yeah,
don't they have issues with ice pushing up every once in a while?
They didn't seem to get that far up. Mm-hmm. It's quite shallow, you see, so the ice was hitting the bottom before it got to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no tide to speak of. The only time, see, if they got a certain wind, the water would push up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just never was there when anything like that happened. In winter, the ice be stacked up 20, 30 foot high on the beach, but seemed to stop there.
Another shot of...
Yeah, that's just... It's like... Yeah, that's actually the land and the lakes all around.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of lakes, most of them oblong, all the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
From the wind working the water.
I'd never heard that. You think after 20 years of college, I would have heard that somewhere along the line.
Well, I thought it was, you know, just some geological thing, but it mm-hmm. turned out, no, one of the scientists out in the Arctic Research Lab said, made some remark about it. He says, no, it's the wind and water over the years.
That actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, you can figure in the spring, you know, it'd start melting and the ice would be pushed one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the winds are generally east and west, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just a picture of the tundra as we're going along, I think.
It looks like part of the bluff is spilling down there.
There's a bit of it, yeah. It's a spring. Things are running off. Must have been spring. Well, summer there. And you see, they used to have a baseball game on the 4th of July, and it got closed because of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a series they took out of the windows.
Mm. Still Barrow?
Yeah, that's Barrow. Somebody got some stuff hanging up there. Something drying up on a rack on the roof.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. You know, that might have been Kaktovik, the village on Barter Island.
Mm.
Yeah, I think probably it is. Yeah. It was a pretty small settlement there then. I don't know what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
See, now they're taking people up there to watch the polar bears come in.
Mm-hmm. Who's got that? Someone here in town, one of the small air carriers, has a tour package to go through.
I think it's the Warblow.
Warblows?
I think so, yeah.
Is that Brooks Range?
Yep, looking inland. It's about... Somebody told me once, I think they said it was about 80 miles from Barter.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go east along the coast from Barter, it comes up right to the edge of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Dew line radar?
That's the dew line radar shot from the runway at Barter Island.
Mm-hmm.
Just a sunset, I reckon.
Yeah, just peeking through the clouds there, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was a beautiful one. The captain had his airplane up there, the Super Cub, O.J. Smith. And one day he says, let's go take the Cub and we'll go pan for gold. I said, Smitty, they've never found any gold on the North Coast, or the North Slope. Well, we'll find it, he says. So off we went. Spent the day on a busman's holiday driving around a Super Cub instead of a DC-3. I don't know which river that is, probably the Hula Hula, but I'm not sure. Big gravel bar, stopped to have lunch. It's a nice way to spend an afternoon.
That's fairly close to the, starting to get in the foothills of the...
Yeah, we were back up in the hills a ways, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very gravel bars.
Plenty of area to land.
Oh, huh? My, yes. Oh, yes. There we are in the winter, heating things up.
Is this Barrow?
It's
hard to tell.
Couldn't say for sure. Mm-hmm. It might have been any of the sites. You see, we'd take off from Barter and would go from Barter to Flaxman to Licktock to Lonely, to Barrow, and the next day go on down Wainwright. Is there another one down in Point Lay? We went to Point Lay about once a week, way down.
Was this a daily? I mean,
we flew 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'd overnight here and overnight there. Sometimes went over to Canada. There's not too many of those. Yeah.
I don't suppose Doug Millard has ever flying any of these.
No, flights. Doug didn't. He had no seniority to stay in the Fairbanks airplanes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows?
Cold and nasty day.
Is that ice fog or is that just a slide that's faded?
I would tend to think it's probably just a cold, snowy day.
Mm-hmm.
You see the leading edge of the wing there. That's the trailing edge of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't see anything else there. Oh, we had a little, that looks like the terminal. At Barter. And there's Smitty's Cub behind the hangar.
Okay.
Covered up damn near to the wing.
Does Smitty keep the wings cleared off in the wintertime?
Well, as much as you didn't worry, it usually blew off.
Mm-hmm.
It just so happened this time it really came around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we kept it in the hangar for quite a while, and then the boss and the new line got irritated about it, so we had to put it outside.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't bother a thing.
Was there much issue when you were flying up there? Just this isn't necessarily related to your repair stuff, but between the hands, the guys who were working and flying in the management?
Yeah, yeah. The fellow that was the head man there, I think he'd been there too long. He was getting a little bit bushy. But if I had to stop in Barrow for any reason to, you know, parts or work on the plane a bit, because that was where I could get the parts the fastest, there was a daily flight in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it would throw him right out into orbit. He didn't like that at all.
Hmm.
And it also, the contract said it need be, we could be gone for several days, you know, off the line in the Fairbanks, maintenance, or whatever it needed. And didn't like those trips at all. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, you know, I just had to have something done I wasn't geared up for. I didn't mm-hmm. have all the parts and pieces. I'm at one end of the due line, and the supplies were at the other end, or in Fairbanks. Got kind of sticky now and then. Politics as usual.
What were the facilities like? There was a hangar at Barrow?
And... There was a hangar at Barrow. There was one at the Licktock and one at Barrow, Licktock, and Barter.
Mm-hmm.
About every other station had a hangar.
But if you couldn't make it to a hangar site to do a repair, you just did it out in the
weather. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Were there any other ever major things that had to be done at a site that didn't have a hangar?
No. The DC-3 is a great airplane in one respect, because I think the figures came out, it took 20 minutes of maintenance for every hour of flying. That is a very good percentage for a piston engine airplane. Mm. And generally speaking, I could pretty well keep up with everything. Unless it came, we had an engine change once. And we had a couple of medicals we came in, and I had some work done then. And that was about it for bringing the plane into town.
Mm.
But no, I didn't have it. I had, I think all the time I was there, I had one cylinder change, and that at away from Barter, which is where I had my spare parts. And that was at a Lick-Talk, and they brought up a piston or a cylinder from Fairbanks and flew it over with the Beaver that was stationed at Barrel. And that was just blew up in the afternoon. We got in, changed it, and we left the next morning.
So did you carry your tools with you, or were there tools at each site?
No, I carried a toolbox with me, what I needed for the normal maintenance work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just left it in the plane. Well, we're back to the Beaver again.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was at Barrow also. I was up there working on the Beaver that Weems had there. Go up there maybe once every month or so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a skinny guy in those days. Oh, yeah. That's at Barrow out on the runway, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm not sure if I get... Were there two runways at Barrow at some point? Doug Millard has a story, and I thought it was a fairly new runway built. I'm not sure.
It was a gravel runway when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I know later on they put in a paved runway. Were it the same one or not, I couldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they got runways at Prudhoe, which were just down the road a ways. Kotzebue had two runways, one paved and one gravel, that was at about a 90-degree angle.
Yeah, Doug's story involved, after like 3 years after the runway was built, the gravel one, it got soft, and he stuck a F-27 taxiing around on it, and they had to tug it out, and he's got a big plaque, and it shows Noel Ween in Circle in 1926 or something, and then Doug underneath there, he says 100 years later or 80 years later, nothing's changed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't remember that incident. The parking area there at Barrow was pretty soft.
Mm-hmm.
These guys would jump in there and lock a brake to turn the airplane, and it would dig a hole, and then they couldn't move.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be moving a little bit before you work the brakes to turn.
Were most of the pilots who were in your experience working for me, most of them came out from the States? Were they homegrown?
Most of them were from outside, of course. Mm-hmm. Older fellas, a lot of them were World War II pilots. And top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, most of the Bush pilots, like the Beaver here, this fellow named Joe Vanderpool was flying this one.
Mm-hmm.
Native guy from down, I don't know where he came from. He used to live in Fairbanks. Good pilot. Let's see, who else? Oh, Sam White was flying for him about this time still, I think.
Sam White flew for Wayne.
Oh, yeah. He flew out of Hughes for ages.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's got a book out. Well, he wrote most of it at Hughes.
Yeah, the book I have, but I haven't quite written it.
I was working for somebody else. Anyhow, I went over to work on Sam's private airplane at Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
And an L5 on floats. And I'm down there tinkering around, cleaning this, cleaning that, checking things. It's looking pretty good. Got all done. Told Sam, I said, well, I want to give it a little test flight here. I think everything's pretty good. And he flew around, come back, says, oh, just right. It's got that one little buzz in it. He says, if that's there, I know everything's good. So we went over to the lodge where he was living, Roadhouse, and went up there and told him about what he owed me. He says, And I said, Sam, you don't remember me. Well, should I? the old gruff. Says, yeah. I says, I lived right down the street from you. I'm Andy Anderson's son. And I used to deliver your paper. And he got the biggest roar out of that. Nothing new. He had to go downstairs. He said, look at my paper boys working on my airplane. Quite a man, Sam was. Quite a man.
Doing all right? Need to take a break or anything?
No, that's okay. Keep going. I got there. I don't know what that is, unless it's propeller. Trying to get some artistic picture here. Yeah, I think that's a beaver sitting there in the sunset. It's about what it looks like. Those slides, they did lighten up, didn't they?
Some of them lightened, some of them darkened. The ones that darkened scanned real good.
Oh, okay.
The ones that lightened, I just couldn't.
Yeah. So, sitting away in the dark all those years, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long time. Like I said, this was what I came in and getting in. I got in time to be here for the flood, so I must have come in early 67. Somewhere in there. Spring of 67. I don't know. Sheesh. Something out there in a tundra, but I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Barrow, Sunray?
I think it's Barrow, yeah. Yeah.
How long were you in Barrow? Just the 1 year?
Well, I was on the Dew Line for a year, but mm-hmm. that was just in the Barrow and out. We hardly maybe go downtown, say hello to people.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, and basically, prior to that, I'd been to Barrow several times working on the bush plates.
Mm-hmm.
Up there. Take care of things, do 100 hour, whatever it took.
Where was the primary base on the Dew Line?
At Barter.
Barter, okay.
For me, yeah.
You guys, was there another Canadian contract flying the Canadian side of the Dew Line?
Yeah. Yeah, we met them several times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. I think they were based at Tuktoyaktuk over in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting place. One of the mouths of the Mackenzie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, along that coast between Tuck and the border, there is a driftwood pile that must go for 40, 50 miles, mm-hmm. stacked up in a beach, all come out of the Mackenzie over the years.
Mm-hmm. When did you have an opportunity to be up in that country, on the Canadian side?
Oh, we just made a trip over that way now, and then it was all Dew Line business. We had to carry somebody over or something special back and forth.
Mm.
First we got, I think, was a place called Cape Perry. I can't remember the designation. See, from Barter East, it was Bar 1, 2, 3, 4. I think that was it. And from towards Barrow, see, they were all POW sites for Point Barrow.
Mm.
Segmented off like that. Oh, that's the beach at Barrow with some old sled sitting there. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Ice in the spring.
Really, that's a sled?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was a piece of driftwood.
I don't know, a couple of handles sticking up and back there.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Whitefish?
Might beach me. Well, it could be. Probably is. Probably is.
Bunch of them.
Oh, yeah. There's quite a bit of it. I think they use most of it for dog food.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's that great big lake just out of Barrow, and I forget the name of it. Teshapuk, something like that.
Maybe. Yeah, there is a big
lake. Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty good memory, Jim.
Comes back a little bit. Well, they were in something else. It's probably the Yukon. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on there. Undoubtedly going someplace.
Big river.
Yeah. Yeah. hills and greenery. No, that's probably the Yukon. A high wing plane. I don't know what I was in there. Well, it's a Cessna. What I was doing and where I was going, I couldn't tell you. Undoubtedly going somewhere to fix something.
So some of the slide fading was just kind of random. I mean, this looks like the same series of pictures.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it?
Some. Let's see. So that's backwards. Here's the right version of it.
Oh, yeah. That's a Piper Clipper I rebuilt. Cute little thing, isn't it? And I believe that's my wife standing next to it.
Mm-hmm. Judy?
Yeah, yeah. I'd like her to see that picture. Oh, it's on the disc, or will be?
It will be. I could, okay. If there's particular pictures, I mean, I can't do hundreds of them, but I can make prints of some of them.
I'd like to have a print of that one.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That was a good little airplane.
Would you have a preference in size?
Oh, I don't know.
4x6, 5x7?
I'd like to have a 5x7 of this. That'd okay. Frame nice. Yeah, that
came out okay.
Good. It's over at Metro Field here in Fairbanks. And that's me way back when with my first airplane. So I learned to fly in.
You're kidding me. That's you?
That's me. I was about 18, 19 years old then, I guess, something like that.
And that was the first airplane you owned to fly?
Yeah. Yeah, I bought it. Then it sat here for a year while I went out to Northrop to go to school. A year and a half, I guess. I came back and rebuilt it that summer. So, yeah, I might have been 20 years old then. Strange, isn't it? Doesn't matter what I wear, I'm a walking shambles.
Oh, I can't think of the guy's last name. We had a guest speaker here the other night. He was an editor for the Anchorage News. You went to high school with him. It's Michael, not Clancy, but what's that guy's last name? Anyways, he went to school with you because he was asking each of us what we were working on for graduate school. And like I say, the guy's an editor in Anchorage. He lived up here for years. He wrote for the Anchorage Daily News. I have his name in my notebook when I'll bring this back up. But he knew you, yeah. I said, did you go to school with Jim Anderson? And he goes, there was a couple Jim Andersons. I was like, the guy who was into airplanes. He's like, oh yeah, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I wonder who that'd be. Oh yeah. That's off the end of Phillips Field and the Noyes Slough.
Mm-hmm.
The plane had just got built up and squared away.
Were they going to take off the slough or taxi to the Chena?
Usually taxied down to the Chena. Some people took off in the slough, but most of them taxied down. It wasn't too far.
What kind of plane is that?
Yeah, it looks like I believe it's a PA-12 with a metal fuselage, which is a modification that Fairbanks Aircraft did on a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is, yeah.
Any idea who that is standing there at the back of the plane?
No idea at all.
Hmm. I guess who were you working for at this time?
Fairbanks Aircraft.
Okay.
Three fellows owned it. Let's see, it was Gordy Mitchell, Dave Phillips, and Jess Bachner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dave sold out, and then Gordy sold out to Jess, and then after a year or so, they changed it to Bachner's Aircraft.
So this would have been way back in the day when you were first working for him. Was this around the same time that you went out to Katna Lake to recover that one that was frozen in the ice?
No.
Not to Katna Lake.
It would have been probably a little later than this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I went to Northrop. Boy, trying to figure all these dates up. I went out to Northrop. I left late in 55 because I spent all of 56 and I got my tickets in 57. Early in 57. So, yeah, this would have to be in 54, summer 55, somewhere in there.
Oh, I know something I meant to ask you. Did you, I scanned your resume. You gave me a copy of your resume,
yeah.
And I still have the original. Do you want to copy that back, or do you have
one? I sure would like to, because it's all gone.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I have one, the original one
you gave me. Every time I turn around and think of something, it went up in the hangar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then they're loading up a Comanche out in front. That would have been one of Fort Yukon Air Service. Mm-hmm. The Fairchild owner.
Was this Phillips Field? Or
Yes, Phillips Field, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's another launching. I don't know whose plane that was.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What was that fellow's name? Bill something. Bill Ackerman. Old timer showed up. Worked there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened there. He was working there when I went off to school. When I came back, he had his own little... He'd been doing repair work. He decided he was going to run his own shop and make a lot of money. But there was a space... I don't know how that all came about.
Mm-hmm. This slide tray had quite the range of pictures in it, from Dewline stuff to back,
yeah, like
working for nice aircraft.
Yeah, I didn't sort things too well. That's something I got mixed up in. That's a Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Same type that Lindbergh flew to Paris.
Really?
And I got conned into helping taking it apart and this and that, and I was going to have a share in the airplane. And of course, that same guy, Bill Ackerman, he sold everything. I never got a nickel.
Mm.
Story of my life. Buy high and sell low. It's kind of interesting. That wing came off in one piece. It must have been 40 foot from tip to tip.
Mm-hmm.
One time it belonged to Al Wright. And one time it belonged to an old boy over at Kotzebue. He was a character, and I can't think of his name right now. Gene Joyner. That was it. Gene Joyner. Yeah, he owned it for a while.
Is this Phillips Field again?
No, this is down the brush off. That's actually... on Airport Road, or off Airport Road,
mm-hmm.
about where Garrity Street is, something like that. No, it would have been Gregory Street. Yeah, it was kind of sitting in Glenn Gregory's yard. He had a cabin down there.
How did this plane arrive to this place?
I have no idea. No idea at all.
Huh. Was the plane ever rebuilt?
I don't know. That soul went outside.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere it might have.
There's the wing.
You said all in one piece.
How much did a wing like that weigh?
I don't know, but we managed to back that truck under it and get it all on there.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Railroad crossing somewhere.
Yeah, it's over by Phillips Field, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the first Apaches in town. Paper.
Phillips Field again?
Yeah. Yeah, there was nothing but trees across the runway.
Now we're going to get into a whole series of hot rod. I think it looks like vacation pictures from somewhere.
Well,
here a little later.
This one was taken at Phillips. I had sold that motorcycle to the guy that's driving it.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after the picture was taken, he dumped it and broke his leg. I brought the bike back up from California after I was going to school there.
Mm-hmm.
Hot little thing.
That might be where some of these pictures coming up were taken, because there's some of them, I think, have palm trees in them.
Oh, there was some taken in Florida, too.
You remember the fellow's name on the bike?
The one hanging on the back is Clarence Smeltzer, who now has run Aero Services for years,
mm-hmm.
owns it. And the guy on the bike, I can't quite think of his name, it'll come to me. Yeah. Army helicopter doing something.
Mm. Same type of helicopter that lifted the engines off that recovery.
No, that was a Chinook. This is an earlier thing they called a flying banana, and it could barely fly. Oh, good, we can back up and show her a picture. Yeah, they had these things out on Wainwright for Well, they were still out there, and I was working on the B-25s in the 60s and early 70s. It's old Sikorskys, I think they were.
Mm-hmm.
There it is, coming up. Judy, come see something.
Oh, my God, that's me. 100 years ago.
Yeah. Good-looking airplane, isn't it?
Yeah.
You too.
My name is Judy.
Yeah, it's Andy.
Andy.
Hi, Andy.
Yeah, this must have been about 1970, 71, somewhere there.
Probably. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes.
Somewhere around in that era.
That's probably because of the colors that I've got on that style.
You know, I'm trying to figure out how you built the airplane. Were you able to get in your garage okay?
Oh, yeah.
I was worried about being in your way.
Oh, no. No problem. No, you have a few dents in your side there for your truck. But
that's fine.
Judy, you see this one? Look at that skinny rascal.
Oh, my gosh. You must have been
awful. But I had a leather jacket. I was an aviator.
Yeah.
About 20, I think.
Yeah, we haven't looked at any of the CDs.
No.
I am so thankful that you came along and copied all of those, Andy.
Well, I'm kicking myself for not have been faster and gotten all of them, but we have about 700 images that I managed to get scanned.
And what, maybe 60, 80% you've got?
Oh, yeah, out of the total, maybe, I'm thinking, I'm not really sure how many albums were left. I got most of the slide trays, but there was... Most of the albums I didn't get, I only got two albums. Oh, yeah, one of the albums had 300 pictures in it.
Yeah, and there were about four or five of those, yeah.
You better keep that.
Oh, yeah.
I found it.
Thanks.
In the ground. In the driveway.
No, that was one of my great things. Where the heck was this? This was after, I think this was after I got out of the Army. Wasn't doing anything for a while. Me and a friend built that. Big Buick engine, and we had a blower hanging on it, and oh my, would it go.
Did you build the frame and everything, or was it built
on? We got the frame somewhere else, but everything, all the rest that we put together, it was just a bare frame when we got it.
Was Courtesy Corner some store in Fairbanks?
It was a... service station,
mm-hmm.
Down on the corner of, geez, what is it? It's right across the Teamsters Hall. There's still a service station, no?
Teamsters Hall.
Yeah. I can't think of the name of the street. Bottom of Noble, and the bottom of Noble where it hooks right.
Did the Teamsters Hall, do they still have offices down there where Fairbanks...
I think that's all. Don't we think that's all? Oh, you mean out there? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they're holed up now. But they had a building down here. And what's the name of that street, anyhow? Noble comes down, turns right, goes over. Then you go across the Noble Street Bridge or something.
But, down there, right there by the courthouse?
Yeah.
Whatever that Chevron station is there?
Yeah.
Ron's?
Ron's, yeah. That's where this was, Courtesy Corner.
Okay.
That's my friend Ernie. He was sitting there. He was the driver.
I like the caveman.
Oh, yeah. Ernie Mann. That was his name. Put that on there. Oh, yeah. If you have a machine, here we are with the supercharger and everything mounted up. Air intakes. Ooh, did it go. Ooh.
Were there drag races in Fairbanks at the time?
Well, there was drag races every night somewhere around Fairbanks. But actually, they'd have a big meet down at Tanacross every summer, and the guys from Anchorage would come up, and we'd go down there. Old runway, it was a great place. That's the only place I drove it at. Didn't have the superchargers on there. Yeah, it was quite a machine. the things that wasted money on. This was taken in Florida.
Okay, these are Florida shots.
Yeah, I was down there before I got drafted and went out there and watched the drag races one day.
How did you get to Florida? I mean, why did you go to Florida?
Oh, it was one of those things. A friend of mine wanted to go out and buy a new car, and he'd been in Florida a bit. So we were talking, and finally I said, well, free license. One guy I knew over at the airport, Philip Seale, he was going to fly out to back east. He said, well, you got room for a couple passengers, and pay part of the gas, and we'll all have a good time and be good. So it's Jack Clowers and I climb in the Tri-Pacer, and Bob, something the pilot's owner's name was, and we flew to Detroit and got off there. Jack bought a new car. And we proceeded to go to Cincinnati to see his folks, and then we went on down to Florida. On the way, we picked up another friend from here named Bruce Perrin. Had a good time. That's where I met my first grits. I was snoozing in the back of the car, or driving along, and he said, "Hey, come on, we're going to have some breakfast." Oh, good. It's early in the morning. Walked in, and they ordered a ham and eggs, as like always, some little roadside diner. This comes out, and I'm looking there, and I says, "What's this stuff?" It looked like wallpaper paste to me. And a voice from the back says, "Them's grits, you Yankee." And this very large black lady came out, and I ate those grits. Yeah, we're going to try them again someday, but I couldn't get a handle on them.
Welcome to the South.
Oh, it was something else. I was amazed. You go in and say, you had to say ham and eggs and potatoes. And part of the time you get French fries instead of hash browns.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
There's
Jack and Bruce there. We were headed across the Tamiami Trail. That must be about a 60 Impala convertible.
Where'd you get the car?
Oh, Jack bought it in Detroit.
Okay.
Yeah, he wanted a new car, and I had to go to the Army, and I think, well, I'll work this out. So I lent him some money to buy the car, and then, of course, he paid me back while I was in the service, so I get money coming in every month, which was very nice. They're both dead now. I'm the only survivor. That's taken out in the Everglades, I think.
This is like, you hear about kids saying, let's go take a road trip. This was like the ultimate road trip, flying all the way across the country, and then
I didn't think much about it. We just wandered along. One guy described that as, he says, the people out where he was living in the summer winters didn't understand the Alaska lifestyle. And I said, well, what do you call the Alaska lifestyle? He says, it's when you get up in the morning, you have an urge to go somewhere, and you jump in the car and go without shooting the breeze and carrying on and planning. He says, everybody in America and the States plan these trips for months before they go.
Mm-hmm.
An Alaskan says, you're going outside? I'll go with you. And you're gone. Oh, sure. I had friends who went down to the airport, see somebody off, and they all went together. I said, heck with it. They left too. There I am.
You know, I would have never guessed that was you.
Why not? Big and ugly as ever.
In that picture, you look like you're 6'7".
Well, yeah. Did you look a little taller, yeah. That's odd, isn't it?
I guess part of the reason it didn't set in my mind that might be was just the order of the slides.
Ah.
Looking at stuff from Alaska and then...
Oh, yeah. Do you remember where these were? It was a big race. There were some top-name people there.
Those look like...
Oh, that was... Yeah, a fella, Don Garfield. Garwood, or something. He's a big drag racer.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time they broke 180 miles an hour. I happened to be there.
Hmm. Those look like mostly just like street cars.
Oh, yeah. They're
every day.
Pretty well hopped up, though. They really got with the program.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It was fun watching them.
So this would have been... You graduated high school and...
No, this would have been in... just before I got drafted to the Army, so this would have been 58.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because after we parted company, everybody went different directions. And I'd gone out to California to see some friends there. And I got a telegram from my mother, and it says, it is 40 below, and the draft board wants you. You better come home.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved that for years when it all went up in the fire again. At least I think it did. Again, Judy might have it somewhere. It's a motor drag racing. They're not too exciting. They don't look, doesn't get you going too much. The cars, I think there's more noise than anything else.
Mm.
And then we're getting into a regular rail job type.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people there.
Oh, there was crowds. Oh, yeah.
There was no safety precautions in place at that time.
Everybody was just there.
Yeah, no guardrails for the people.
No, just there.
Do you remember what city this was in?
We might have been over in St. Petersburg by then.
Mm.
Somewhere out of there.
That looks awful.
It was an old Air Force base of some sort.
That looks similar to what you built.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
Mm.
Quite a time.
I know when I was in high school or just out of high school, whenever I was in the States, I'd always migrate to drag races in California.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like an Alaska thing to do.
Fun thing to do, go around and watch them a bit.
Disneyland, no interest. A drag race, take me to it.
Well, years ago, I used to say, you've got to see Disneyland and Las Vegas before you die. But Disneyland was fun. Seeing how a nice-looking girl was me.
Mm-hmm.
But Vegas was fun. So we went back to Vegas last year, Judy and I. In fact, we got married there again. Remarried. And the place had changed so much, I didn't enjoy it all.
Mm-hmm.
We were staying further out in the strip in this big place called the Excelsior or something. God sakes, there's people in there with their kids and everything else, and I just couldn't figure out what was going on, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know where that was taken. I know I've had it for years. I think that it might have been a commercial one that I had for some reason or somebody give me. You know, that used to set alongside the road outside of town here. No, it's further down. There's too many mountains. These are commercial ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah. When I was in the Army, my mother sent me some. Uh-huh. And she just bought a bunch and she sent them out so you could look at them. You know, wildlife and old cabins and things.
Okay. Because, yeah, there's yeah. a moose here and there's
yeah,
this beautiful...
Yeah, that's what these are. Yeah, these are the ones she sent me when I was off the service.
Double rainbow.
Yeah.
They all look Alaskan.
Oh, yeah, they are. They are. That house used to be down on about 6th and Cowles.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of houses, when did you... originally build this house that we're in?
Started building in 63 when I went to work for Weens.
Mm-hmm.
I went to work for Weens and I said, hell, I might as well get some property and build down here. Lots were 60 by about 120, $650 each, $25 down, $25 a month.
Wow.
Wow, how things have changed.
Yeah, $12,000 a lot now.
Huh? That's what somebody sold one for, yeah. Oh yeah, those are all commercial pictures. Probably from, his name, fella had a photo studio here for years, right on 2nd Avenue. My mother worked there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were definitely using different film than I was, different camera, too.
That almost looks like it's taken from the ridge above Farmer's Loop or something.
Looks like it. There's
a lot of places.
Yeah, somewhere up there. There's the Nenana sitting in the river about where the power plant is now.
Mm-hmm. Was that a studio shot again?
I don't know.
There we are back to Arctic Village.
Okay.
Well, Jim, I think we'll wrap it up for today.
Alrighty.
Get a little more done.
Mm-hmm.
My mom is transcribing the interviews for me.
Oh.
I'd reckon that one interview, 1 hour of audio, works into somewhere between 20 and 25 pages of type.
Oh, my.
And she, it takes her probably an hour for 2 pages. So I got to hand it to my mom. I got to get her... Gonna have to get her a big bouquet of flowers for
her. Take her out to the Turtle Club.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's just about right, yeah.
The next one we'll do audio on is a 300-picture photo album. So we'll either have a marathon session or we'll do it in chunks.
Okay.
Because there's a typical slide tray is about 100 images. Mm-hmm. The photo album is 300 pictures.
Oh, now. Okay.
Because I was thinking to myself, I was like, wow, photos, this is going to go quick on the scanning. Then I looked at the cover, 300 pictures. I got a lot of work to do here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I sure appreciate it, Jim.
Well, I can't tell you how much to thank you for what we did salvage out of that mess. Yeah. A little bit of history to leave behind me.
Mm-hmm.
Used to worry about who's going to die and who's going to get this and who's going to get that. And, oh, God, this is going to be a mess. I have to sell all this tools and crap in this hangar and get...